Welcome back in. College Golf Talk is back front and center. We're laying this one down on a Thursday afternoon at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. I know you've got a big interview coming up a little bit later in this edition of the pod with Cohen Trolio, a familiar face in a new place. And boy, he is making the most of it. And we've got a lot on both of our plates, college golf front and center. And I'm pivoting the last couple of days, doing some college hoops at a men's game at St. Bonaventure on Sunday. And boy, do we have a big one tonight in the Atlantic 10, Brentley.
Oh, man, the Bonnies. What's kind of your pregame routine with basketball? We kind of know what it is with golf, and especially the NCAAs. There's a breakfast with Burko every year. What's your basketball routine? Because it's a later tip. You know, you got the entire afternoon ahead of you. You got shoot around, all this stuff. What's give us a little peek behind the curtain.
Well, we got a and I sort of teased it, but you didn't follow up on it. We've got first place on the line for the ladies in the Atlantic 10, Richmond hosting St. Joseph's. You're looking at about 8 to 10 hours of prep. I get my boards done front and center, and then 2 hours, 4 minutes later, the boards are gone. I keep them, but it is kind of the same type of prep, but referencing the coaches. I got up at 0:30, flew into Richmond. There's a shoot around at 3:15. For Richmond, I'll go over there and then stay at the Robbins Center until tip at 8. But we do Zoom calls with both coaches, the analyst and myself, questions, get a sense of who they are, what they do, what we might expect to see, strengths, weaknesses. So a similar general view, whether it's a college golf coach or a college basketball coach, they both have 5 in the lineup, or at least on the floor at the same time. How about this, though? In my stats, and I did college basketball in my former life, I'm fortunate to do some now. The Richmond Spiders are the best shooting women's college basketball team in the country. Over 51%, all 5 starters average over 50% from the floor. They're the second best from behind the arc, nearly 40% from 3-point shooting. They took on Texas, Tennessee, and Alabama in December to see just how good they might be. They only lost to Texas by 11. The Longhorns just beat South Carolina, arguably the best team in the country, the other day. I am jacked. I cannot wait. Something's going to give with these two, but you've got my one last nugget. There are 2 conferences right now in women's college basketball that have 3 or more teams with 20 or more wins, the SEC and the Atlantic 10. Richmond and St. Joe's already with 20 victories. How about
sounds
that?
Like Stanford women's golf versus USC women's golf. It sounds like
get this out before similar. 8 o'clock. Turn on Peacock tonight. It's gotta happen. It's gonna be fun. And then we lead you right into USC and UCLA. Juju Watkins against the top ranked Bruins.
I mean, that's a game that I'm actually super pumped to watch. I'm going to have kind of a crossover weekend, too. We're going to head up Saturday, catch the 36-hole day of the Gator Invitational, Oklahoma State, obviously Florida amongst the big golf teams there, South Carolina at Florida in the Stephen C. O'Connell Center, 8:30 tip. We'll catch that. And then the next day, we'll be in on the east coast of Florida in Melbourne for the Moon Golf, which – the Darius Rucker is obviously on our airwaves, is considered probably the best regular season tournament of the spring. Moon Golf isn't far behind. A lot of the same teams, Texas, South Carolina, Florida State, Auburn. So jam-packed college golf weekend for me. I'm super pumped.
I like it. A lot on our plates, as I said. Again, Cohen Trolio joining you a little bit later on in this edition of College Golf Talk. Let's quickly recap what we have seen over the last few days. Start with the ladies. Stanford, San Diego State Classic. They win by 32 shots. I had to double check there. We talked about that recruiting class, maybe as good as we've ever seen, and some new faces showing just how good they are.
Yeah, and it was really a record-breaking, record-tying week, and it seems that happens every single time the Cardinal tee it up right now. And for Miha Ortegren, the freshman, to get her first college victory. This is a name to keep an eye on. Maybe not even this spring and in college golf, but you know, the tournament at Augusta National, the Augusta National Women's Amateur, she certainly would be on a short list, I think, to win there. Talented player. Obviously, we've talked so much about this talented freshman class, but when you start looking back and you look at the fact that she won by 8 shots, no other player in the history of the program, not Rose Zhang, she won by 7 twice, not Mariah Stackhouse, not Rachel Heck, none of them have won a tournament by 8 shots. So super bullish on Stanford, obviously, and Miha is a big reason why. And then having Mega Gane continuing to play well, it's you only go so far as kind of your senior leader, and they kind of lost that emotional leader in Rachel Heck last year. This year, can Mega Gane step into that? She's obviously playing some great golf. They're going to need her here in a few months.
What is it now? 7 straight stroke play events? I know they had the one in New Mexico where it was sort of a round robin match play, for lack of a better term, but there is some sense of a streak, correct?
Yeah, I actually have it right here. Let me find it.
There you go.
So it is Stanford's. They have won 6 straight.
I think it's
now,
7.
Stroke play events. Well, technically, I didn't count the match play. I counted the stroke play at NCAAs. I'm pretty sure it's 6.
No, it sounds right. I know it was right. Good one, and I'm going to give you a sidebar. As I was watching the scores throughout the course of that event, love Ann Walker, love Stanford. They're on a quarter system. They do it their own way. I need to see them play at Darius. I need them to be at the Therese Hessian.
Yeah, you're right. It's 7.
That's it.
Never
it
doubt Burka. Never doubt. Yes. But yeah, well, I fully agree with you. I mean,
I've got to see them do it. And that's just my 2 cents. And Walker, arguably the best coach, one of the best, no doubt about it, in women's or men's college golf. I'm missing something, that whether it's at Long Cove or the East Coast of Florida or Palos Verdes. That's just my little sidebar event.
Well, and I think there might be a method to this madness. You look and see the fact that they got 96.84 weighted points in the rankings for their victory at San Diego State. They got, you know, similar to that at the Molly, which is very comparable to what some of these teams are winning the Therese Hessian, or, you know, winning Stanford's home event, which obviously Stanford plays in that one. But a little bit, you know, maybe some play with the rankings, and maybe kind of an example of why the rankings might not be totally accurate, just because, as we know, with these points-based rankings, your own ranking factors into that. And in a head-to-head ranking, you don't get credit for beating yourself. I think Stanford gets a lot of credit for being so good. They, you know, bump up the total point value, if you will, at these tournaments. But yeah, that's I digress.
Yeah, just wanted to throw that out there. I want more, and we'll get it at La Costa most likely a few months from now. Some quick hitters on the men's side: Arkansas, Eric Fortledge, they sweep titles down in Puerto Rico, the Palmas Del Mar Collegiate. I like Fortledge. Was in the mix in Argentina at the Latin America Amateur Championship. He's made some changes during the offseason, November, December, January. They're really starting to take shape. SMU continuing its strong year, a one-shot win over Kent State at the Hal Williams. Zach Kingsland, the individual title. Aaron Jarvis, now at SMU, was at UNLV when he won the LAAC. Birdied the last hole. That's the difference. Got to know him a good bit in Argentina as well. Hard not to root and like the kids from the Cayman Islands. But the big one in Hawaii, I've never been to the Amera-RA Invitational, but when you shoot 64 under par, I guess if the wind doesn't blow, and it's probably shorter than what these guys are used to, but nonetheless, the Cowboys ended the fall on a good note, kicking off 2025 on a good one. They beat North Carolina by 5. You've got Texas, Auburn, Oregon rounding out those top 5 teams. Arizona State second-ranked team in the country, eighth without Jose Ballester. Individually, Tommy Morrison, his first collegiate win, beating North Carolina's Hampton Roberts in a playoff. A lot to digest from there. I think we referenced the Cowboys earlier in 2025. It now seems to be coming together for them a little bit more. You can win an event, you catch my eye. You win two in a row, now you're piquing my interest to say maybe the folks in Stillwater are solidifying a run here over the next couple of months. Give credit to North Carolina. They're hanging around. We keep talking about Vandy, North Carolina, and the drop-off, if it would happen, when you start to lose some players. It's a good go-around for North Carolina. Texas was right there. Auburn, I mean, Oregon, Casey Martin's team always finds a way to make it to La Costa. And then without Jose Ballester, USAM champ, things happen. I go back to, I think, what we said at the start of this year. There's no clear-cut favorite, in my opinion. You know, for 2, 3, 4 years, I think you could count on one hand and feel good you'd have it covered. I think you can go almost 2 full hands, and you still might leave some on the side.
Mm-hmm. And you throw Oklahoma State now into that group of teams who have the potential, have the talent. It's always impressed me with Alan Bratton squads over the years. And I know players change, but you know, kind of the traditions and the fabric of these programs don't really, but they kind of flex their muscles all over the map. I mean, they win in Hawaii. They can win in Columbus, Ohio. They've won so many regionals there at the Scarlet Course. They can win in Florida. It'll be interesting to see what they do in Gainesville this weekend. But this is a team that can travel, led by Preston Stout now. They're starting to gain some experience. I'm really bullish on them. And I feel like we haven't quite given Tommy Morrison the credit over the last couple of years. He came a semester early a couple years back. A little bit of an up and down, but I mean, Burko, this guy, I think he's more than just the 6'9" giant that hits a golf ball. He has become a quite literally a top 10 amateur in the world, and someone who, with the resume that he's put together so far this season, it would not surprise me if he was in the conversation potentially to win a Haskins Award or at least be a first team All-American.
Yeah, and then potentially a Walker Cup selection. You know, we're going to be at Cypress in September for that. You know, you wonder who are locks, who aren't. To me, I was thinking about that on the plane of, it's the guys that probably won't be on the team, that should be on the team, that would be on the team, but they're going to head to the PGA Tour, whether it's Luke Clanton or does Jackson Koivin get the points. So I think those likely departures will now open the door for maybe a couple of names we're not thinking about. But I know I just kept going to what that team could be. And don't get me wrong, Nathan Smith's going to have a great one.
Yeah, and it's funny looking at the top 10 right now in the World Amateur Golf Ranking. I mean, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, potentially 6 guys turning pro before the Walker Cup team. So yeah, if there's going to be a year, and I think I said this last year when I kind of saw the writing on the wall, how this team was shaping up, I'm like, this might be GB and I's best shot in a while to win overseas and win a away Walker Cup. Certainly Tommy Morrison, I think at this point, has to be as close to a lock as you can get. You probably throw Ben James and Jackson Koivin in there just because I think it'll be tough for Koivin to get to 20 at least in time to get his card for the summer. So I think he will be on that team. The question marks for me are Jackson Van Paris and Brendan Valdez. These are two guys who were part of the practice session 2 months ago down in South Florida. They're seniors. They're going to be graduated. So it'll be interesting to see if they do in fact want to stay amateur that long in hopes of being on the team. Evan Beck, I think Stuart Hegestad's run as the mid-am representative is probably over. Evan Beck won so many majors of mid-am golf last year, including the U.S. mid-am. We'll see him at the Masters. And then after that, Burko, I don't think there is another guy who, you know, is super comfortable with his spot on the team. I mean, you look at a Wells Williams, Drew Goodman, Max Herendeen, Ethan Fang, Jay Summey. I mean, after about the first, I don't know, five guys on the team, it's wide open, and it's going to be like we see every summer. You know, I always go back to that one summer before the LACC Walker Cup, and that was probably regarded as, I think, the best team, best U.S. team ever, even better than that 2007 team. I think when we look back in 20 years, it's going to be clearly better. But that was a summer, if you remember, Cameron Champ won like two or three times, and Will Zalatoris had a solid July and won the Trans-Miss. Colin Morikawa went out and won the Northeast that summer. So, it's going to be fast and furious once we get to this summer.
From Walker Cup talk to another event in Puerto Rico, and how about the Purdue Boilermakers surprising many, winning the Puerto Rico Classic, beating Ole Miss by 6, South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma, the top 5 teams. When that one was all concluded, sophomore Sam Easterbrook, medalist for Purdue. A lot of people battling the flu and stomach issues, but let's talk the Boilermakers. Andrew Sapp, he was at Michigan, he was at North Carolina, he's got another chance, and boy, the folks in West Lafayette have to be pretty happy.
Yeah, and this was a full circle moment, because before he got the head coaching job at Michigan, he was at Purdue as an assistant coach. That was really his kind of second assistant job. He was a player at North Carolina, actually teammates with Rob Bradley at North Carolina, was the assistant there for a couple of years, then went to Purdue. And it's funny, that's where he met his wife. They bought their first house there. And then, as he told me yesterday on the phone, they have now bought their 6th house in West Lafayette. So a cool full circle moment for Andrew Sapp. And this is a team, I think, Berko, that is definitely flying under the radar, maybe not so much anymore, but they came into the spring ranked just outside the top 50. And it's going to be interesting to see just how far they fly up these scoreboard rankings after this win. Kind of an up and down fall, but their worst finish, they were without one of their best players who was out playing the Asia Pacific Am. So you kind of throw that away. They now have 2 wins, but to win an event like this and beat your Oklahomas and some of the best teams in the SEC, the top ranked team in the country, and Ole Miss, I know guys were vomiting on tee boxes and maybe some teams not at full strength, certainly Ole Miss not at 100%. Even knowing all that, it's still tough to win a college golf tournament of this caliber. So hats off to Purdue, and might be giving the men's basketball team a run for their money. They've had so much success on the hardwood. Why not, why not Purdue, you know, getting it done on the golf course as well?
Sooners 5th, Virginia 7th, Tennessee, that is 8th. I don't have concerns in the middle of February, but if you're going to hold me to something, got to see the Volunteers maybe start putting something together. You know, there have been times there's been a ton of talent in Knoxville. I think Brennan Webb's a really, really good coach. But it is about making it to Nationals and getting to match play. In my estimation, if you want to be considered one of those 8, 10, 12, you know, upper echelon programs, and just haven't really seen that.
Yeah, and I'm right with you. Tennessee is a team that I think has gotten worse as the season has gone on, and you look at the results. I mean, they were 3rd at their home event, which it's your home event. You got to at least, if not win that, finish runner-up.
Win.
And then they go 8th. And it's not like their home event's not like one of the better fields. It's certainly not a bad field. But then you go to Valero, you finish middle of the pack there. 5th at Notre Dame, which is not a great finish. 11th, only beaten 3 teams at the Gulf Club of Georgia. And then you have a week like this in Puerto Rico. And so I think the Volunteers, you're right, they need to figure it out. Jackson Harrington was supposed to be one of those freshmen who came in right away and got things done, but the fridge, I think, has been unplugged for most of this season. So he's got to get some, you know, a new water filter, maybe cleaned out a little bit, get some of the expired food out of it, and get him up and running, and running on some cool air. So and one more thing too, speaking of freshmen, have you heard much about this kid from Iceland on LSU, Arne Svensson?
I've heard the name. I feel like you're going to tell me a great story.
No, he's just really good. I think it's no surprise. It's no surprise that this isn't a particularly stout freshman class. Daniel Bennett from Texas obviously is playing some good golf, but I think when we look back on this class and maybe even a year from now or 6 months from now, we're going to look and say Arne Svensson's the best talent in this class. And the guy's got a lot of game. I know Jake Amos is head coach, which what else is he going to say? But he's super high on this kid and a lot of agents and equipment reps and stuff. So that's just a name to watch for people wanting kind of that next star to kind of impress your friends who are college golf fans. Tell them to keep an eye on this kid from Iceland. He's really good.
We will keep an eye on him and watch his results as his career continues. As promised, as we said at the top of this edition of College Golf Talk, time now for Brently Romine, who caught up with a young man who's maybe one of the comeback players in the college game in recent years, Cohen Trolio.
All right. Welcoming in Ole Miss junior Cohen Trolio. Junior, right? I said that correctly. I know with transferring and all that stuff, sometimes people's classifications can get a little confusing, but we have two more years of eligibility, right?
Or that's one correct. One and a half now. Yes, sir. But yes, sir. I'm a junior. Well, yes, in eligibility.
Well, glad that you made it back safely from Puerto Rico. I understand that it was, I guess as college golf tournaments go, kind of a crazy week for the Ole Miss Rebels. You guys were sick. Your assistant coach took one in the dome. Looked like he had been in a bear fight. I'm glad that you're in one piece, but what's your kind of recap of the week that was in Puerto Rico for you guys?
Yeah, so we all were sitting at home, and it's like 2 days before we leave, and like I see my little brother, and I know that he's not feeling good, but I'm not gonna say anything, you know, because we're all practicing. And then I live with Tom Fisher, and he's not saying much, so I'm like, he's probably not feeling good. And then obviously practice ends, and I'm like, are you feel okay? And they're like, no. So I'm like, oh gosh. So then we go home and sleep, and then wake up in the morning. And I went to the doctor at like 7 o'clock in the morning. And then like right after that, I get there, he's like, everybody on the team just called me. So we all get tested for the flu. And pretty much all of us have the flu. And we leave for Puerto Rico the next day. So luckily, I guess now with all the medicines and stuff, it's like you can take a pill and it goes, at least the symptoms go away in like two or 3 days. So traveling up there, it was on NyQuil. And then we played nine holes the next day once we got there, and everybody felt all right. And then by the time of the first round, to be honest with you, everybody was feeling, for the most part, very solid. And then I guess it was a wild week, to be honest. So then where everybody's plays the first two rounds, playing solid golf. And then I played number one the last day, and Coach Newsom is with me, waiting with me on number one. So I get done with number one. I'm walking to number two, and one of the kids I play with tee off first, and he kind of hits this ball that hangs over the right, over a right bunker. It's a little dogleg to the right, and this ball is kind of hanging, flies the bunker, and then I see Coach Hibble from Oklahoma sprinting across the fairway, and I'm like, what in the world? And then, so now I see Coach Malloy and Coach Newsom driving towards me in a golf cart. And I'm like, I don't, that's weird. They're both coming back here because I'm the last one playing, you know, like, I don't, whatever. And then he gets near me and there's blood all over his face. And I just was like, kind of looked at him when he drove by me in the cart. And obviously, I think I was the only one who saw him, if that makes sense. But like, it's weird because normally everybody on the team can kind of have, like, the coaches bounce between. You see them. They might be on a par 3 tee, a par 5 fairway, depending on whatever. But, like there for a little while, nobody had any idea what was going on, but I kind of did, but I didn't know whether to say anything, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he obviously ended up being okay. He yeah. posted the photo. He said that things are all good, although I guess a few inches down, he probably would have lost his eyesight. So obviously, thanks.
No doubt.
I mean, very thankful. But as far as the team, I mean, you guys entered that event as the top-ranked team of the country. You were the top-ranked team over winter break, which is always kind of a cool title to kind of carry through to this Amer events or putting the clubs away and keeping on a number one ranking. But to not come through to the win, you know, with the win, Purdue clips you guys by six mm-hmm. shots. It's only like you don't win titles in February, but how do you guys move on from, you know, not winning a tournament because you guys had done it so much in the, you know, during the fall?
No doubt. You know, I think when it comes to like great golfers and like I haven't been around, I've been around a good many, but not all of them, right? But I do know
you've been around Jim Gallagher Jr. I mean,
that's right. But I do know that not every single time a really good player walks out there, they have their best stuff. But it's kind of about like great players / great teams. Like when they don't have their best stuff, they still put together like under par rounds or something around there. You know, they keep themselves in it, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. So you know, that last day, we as a team probably didn't have close to our best stuff, but we never really put ourselves out of it, if that makes sense. So I feel like coming off the event, obviously we all wanted to win extremely bad, but when it's all said and done, you know, that it was a wild week. You know, going there, we weren't sure if we'd be all healthy. And then, obviously, we got in it and competed well. And then it didn't go our way. But it's honestly really cool to see. We have five guys, and I shot one over the last day, and our team didn't play well at all. And I wasn't accounting yeah. score, right? And I mean, the wind's blowing hard. Like you gotta keep your golf ball in front of you at that golf course. So six under when we don't have it on a windy kind of, you know, it's not the end of the world. And I think we can all build on not having our best stuff and still keep ourselves in events, you know?
Well, you ended up finishing fifth, even with that one over score in the final round. Four straight top tens, I think it is now for you this season, first year in Oxford. What do you credit, or what all do you credit for this resurgent play?
You know, I first off, I wanted, like, Coach Malloy having me in Oxford is a huge blessing. My brother being in Oxford and then me knowing all the guys at Ole Miss, what kind of gave me the ability to come into Oxford and it really feels like home. And everybody kind of accepts the new guy, if that makes sense. 'Cause that's not always the easiest thing to do. And then, you know, as far as the play is that it's like golf is, it's just a game, if that makes sense. But it's when you're playing it and you want to be one of the best players in the world, you care about it so much. And for me personally, when I'm playing very well, I'm very calm and like I'm not worried about outcomes. I'm not worried about this and I'm not worried about that. And here at Ole Miss, Coach Malloy does a fantastic job preaching on like not worried about outcomes, and me and him speak the same language, and it's just been very I'm trying to think of the right word, but it's been inspiring to be around Coach Malloy and then all the other guys on the team here, because it's kind of helped. It's a blessing, really. It's kind of pushed the buttons that I needed to be pushed.
Let's go back to last year though. When did you know it was time to change some scenery and leave LSU?
You know, that, I knew pretty quickly into last year that I needed a change. we had a coaching change early in the year, and I was just like, it's time for me to definitely make a change, and let's go play some great golf.
Was being a little further away from home, not that West Point's all that far from Baton Rouge, but is being closer to home, is that, does that have any kind of effect, or has that had a boon, you know, been a boon to your golf game this year?
You know,
being closer to your dad, obviously your dad 100%. DJ is your instructor, and
yeah, no, I mean, I would say that in the mindset that I'm in now and where I'm currently at, like, it doesn't really matter necessarily how far I am, but when there's a little bit of doubt and stuff creeping in, having my dad close is extremely important, right? And even just having home, and Tim Yelverton's my uncle, he's at Old Waverly as well, so that's like, it's just close to have somebody to talk to, be like, hey, I'm not making any putts.
How many schools did you visit when you were thinking about where you were going to land? And then what made Ole Miss the right fit for you?
So I visited I think three other schools besides Ole Miss. And you know, as I got older and talked to other players who played professional golf and were successful in professional golf, a lot of kids don't think about, and especially I didn't think about, like playing somewhere that you can raise money after school, because playing golf is expensive after school, and I'm not like, everybody has to do it, you know what I mean? If their parents aren't supporting them, then like, you know, there's certain guys who can support you, and just happens to be like, well, if you're a Mississippi guy and you go to a Mississippi school, and you obviously have to play good enough golf to be successful and for them to kind of know your name, and you have to form relationships and all of that kind of stuff. But Ole Miss, to me, stood out with obviously Coach Malloy being a huge factor. The guys on the team kind of speaking the same language as I do. They're all very cool. We had a great relationship before I got here. And then my brother being here, huge deal. We're best friends. And I missed him every day that I was in Baton Rouge. So having him here has been awesome. And then, you know, Jackson Subers, a really, really good friend of mine. He obviously played here, and he comes back sometimes. And Jonathan Randolph is right up the street from here, and I've known him since I was a little kid. And he's a mentor of mine. And, you know, obviously, too, like what I said, the raising money part after school, and Ole Miss just kind of checked all those boxes, if that makes sense.
How much confidence did Coach Malloy show you right off the bat? You know, maybe that first meeting when he's trying to get you to come, you know, be a rebel. It's different, I think, for guys, maybe a D3 player of the year who transfers in, and everyone, he's playing great and all this. But you were, you know, coming off a year where you didn't play much, and, you know, your game wasn't, you know, may have not been where it was at back in 21 and 2019 when you made the run at the AM. Do you remember anything about just how much confidence Coach Malloy showed you right away?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I remember. Well, so I didn't play last year. I decided when there was some coaching stuff go on, I decided to pull. Like, I wasn't going to play, if that makes sense. So that I didn't. My game wasn't in bad shape in that moment in time, but with my future, looking into my future for several reasons.
Keep that eligibility.
At that time, with all the situations that were blending in together there, the best option for me was to do what I did and kind of pull that plug and not play. So then when I got here, I'd played some summer golf, if that makes sense. And like not playing competition in that long, like jumping back into Susquehanna, Northeast, Southern, you know, I didn't, my game was close and like it felt all good, but I just wasn't scoring. Mm-hmm. And after him, like Malloy, Coach Malloy, when he would call me, he would be like, he never said a negative word about it. You know, every time it was like, you're just getting back into competition. I believe in you. We're gonna have an awesome year. I can't wait to get on the golf course with you. And then kind of during that summer when we first met, yeah, it was nothing but positive. Like, I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. We're going to make an awesome team. And, yeah, I mean, it just felt like that I was going to be valued at Ole Miss, if that makes sense. And Coach Malloy kind of valued me here. And I value him letting me be here, and I valued the other guys on the team. And so it just ended up being a very, very good fit.
He certainly stands out, I think, too, as a coach, just in terms of, I mean, the guy dressed up like Evel Knievel at a football game recently.
Yeah.
He was doing those interviews at softball games or baseball games. And I think maybe from the outside, he could come across as, I guess, for lack of a better word, you know, kind of a slapstick, kind of class clown type guy. But there's also stories of him, you know, really getting the most out of Brooks Koepka when Brooks was a bad out of hell freshman, and, you know, all of these development stories. What do you think makes Malloy such a good coach? And I guess, do you have a good story so far that, you know, maybe shows the lighter side of him as well?
Oh, I'm trying to think. So, you know, I don't know necessarily, like, if someone's examples of what a great coach is might not be the same as mine, but Coach Malloy, I've been around some coaches in my life, and the best ones don't say, this is my way, you're going to do it my way. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
And so since I've been here, Coach Malloy expects you to be a man, and he expects you to act like a man and like be on time, those little things. And he's like, that's things that you're supposed to, you know, when we're at college, we're supposed to grow into men too and develop into golfers. So that's an important side of it. But on the golf course, I've never one time had him say, this is my way, you're going to do it my way. And I think that when he looks at a kid and he learns their personality, he kind of coaches them through that, if that makes sense. So we're a team, and he's so good at building teams together and the different personalities together. And it's just like, it's perfect this year. It blends like perfectly, and he knows everyone. And I mean, the biggest thing that stands out to me is there's no, this is my way. My way is the only way, or leave. You know what I mean? There's none of that. And so especially like when it comes down to golf games and like golf swings and that kind of stuff, you know? So I mean, he's phenomenal. And that's just one, I guess, one little piece of why I believe he's a great coach. I'm trying to think of a lighter.
What's his oddest quality? I mean, what's the weirdest thing that he does where you're kind of like, that's a little different?
Like, he's a smiler on the golf course. No matter what happens, though, like you could make a double bogey on the first hole, and he's gonna ride up and be like, man, you know what I mean? Which is honestly fun to like see, because you're like, that's not the end of the world. He doesn't think it's the end of the world. It's, you know, most of the time when you see someone you trust and believe in you, and be like, you got this, you know, that, like, that's a good smile after a double bogey from anyone. It's good to see. It definitely makes things better.
Well, I mean, he's definitely smiling with the way you've been playing, but it's hard to believe it's now been, what, 6 years since your run at Pinehurst, or I believe you were either the youngest in some time to make the semifinals of the USAM, and then A couple years later, you played Nick Dunlap in the final of the U.S. Junior. What do you do better now in your golf game? And is there anything that you're like, man, I wish I could go back in time and bottle up a little bit of this or that?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, those two runs were really, they're really cool situations. And looking back, I actually wish that I could go back and take the good from both of those. I left both of those and took away the bad for a long time. Like it was cool and all, but I looked at that as it being bad, not like I guess
failure, you know, not winning. Yeah,
correct. From my perspective, like that being almost a letdown, if that makes sense. And also when I went through both of those runs, you know, they're long runs and you can play some really, really good golf. I was playing good golf after both of those as well and before them. But obviously they just got highlighted through those two events. And when you have certain swing feels, or the ball feels like it's coming off this way that week, right? And so an issue that I ran into was like, I was having success through that and feeling this, just say it's whatever in the golf swing or however the ball comes off the face. And I would try to feel that. Now I'm a year and a half later and I'm like, Dad, I want the ball to come off like this. I felt like this, like using a bunch of past, like just staring straight at the past, you know, if that makes sense. And, and like, it just golf doesn't work that way and life doesn't work that way. So once I kind of realized that, like, the past in the past, I did some cool stuff. Let's take away the awesome stuff that I did at Pinehurst and at Country Club North Carolina. Like, let's take the positive out of that and then let's become a better version of Coentrolio, not like just an updated version from 2021 to 2019, you know, if that makes sense. So, like, going back, I would say that I'm definitely a better putter now. I drive it just as straight, but hit it further now. And then the iron game has always been a strength of mine. Like, the ball striking has always been a strength of mine. But now I can just get around a golf course a little bit better, and I don't make as many, like, I guess junior golf mistakes is what I call them. So I feel like that every aspect of the game is better. And those runs come at weird times and you never know what events it's going to be in. And obviously when those situations come up and opportunities come, I'll be ready for it again. But I guess to answer your question, like the biggest thing that I wish I could go back and do is take away the positives from a positive situation, because I took away negatives away from a positive situation. And to be honest with you, they carried with me for a pretty long time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. Even hearing guys like Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth talk now, it always seems like when guys are struggling on the PGA Tour, they try to go back to, you know, how it felt playing golf as a kid when you just had fun with it and you did think positively and didn't worry so much about all the ailments or all the bad breaks or anything like that. So that's definitely interesting. You mentioned your dad again. What's it like having a father who is also a very successful instructor in the same sport that you play? I mean, he not only teaches you, I assume he teaches your brother, Wells Williams at Vanderbilt, who just won again. He's got a pretty impressive stable of guys that have come out of Old Waverly in West Point, Mississippi. But what's it like having a dad who is also the guy who's teaching you the game?
No doubt. Man, I don't know where I could start from here. It's a blessing that he's been in my life from learning the game of golf, because it is – it's made me learn it faster, I guess you could say. And then he teaching your son golf, and my dad teaching me during the lessons, you know, obviously it's dad son relationships, and like you really have to work on that stuff, because it's not easy. Like when I get to 12 years old and think I know it all, and he's like it's not no, like, let's just chill out. And you know, I don't even know how to describe it, really. It takes a lot of work, and you know, like that we, I guess the easiest way to put it would be like, you can try to make it a father and then a golf coach, but that's impossible to do, right? Because, we, or at least me and dad, like never that, like he's always my dad. And like, there's no way that we can ever be standing on a driving range and me say something smart to him and that ever fly. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, we try to make things as simple and as calm, and I trust him with every single thing in my golf game. And it's honestly great. The older I get, the more I appreciate it, and the more that it flows very smoothly, if that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine it being not that way, to be completely honest with you. It's been a blessing. And like I said, the older I get, the more I appreciate it.
How often do you send him swing videos, or how often is he coming to visit? Are you going home to fine tune things with your swing?
You know, I think I went home last semester like two times during the season. And then, you know, for me personally, I'm not like, I get a little bit obsessed with the golf swing. So I'm on a video count. If that makes sense. I play, the better golf I play, the less swing videos are being taken. So
what's
I,
your count?
Oh, well, right now it's, I don't know, I could check, but I probably hadn't sent one in the last probably few weeks, to be honest with you. So I get obsessed with it a little bit. So the better, especially during season, we're kind of no swing videos. He can see it in person, and we can work on fixes and stuff. But it's not a swing video through our messages that much.
How deep down the rabbit hole did you get when you were struggling?
Pretty deep down the rabbit hole. I just kind of forgot about like the low hanging fruit is what we call it. The like the wedges, the making your five footers, the lag putting. It's not all about hitting a five iron straight. It's not all about hitting a driver straight. There's a lot that goes into scoring a golf ball. And I went down that rabbit hole a lot, and that was not the first time at all. Like, golf is up and down anyway. Everybody falls into that a little bit at some point in their life. And so that, the more that I struggled, the more that I went down that rabbit hole. And then when I finally was like, I'm done chasing, like we're here. And then like, let's just enjoy being here and let's crawl our way out rather than dreading being there and trying to get out of it every single day. And let's take our time and get out of it. And that wasn't even just like a golf swing thing. That was like a mental thing, the way that I carried myself, all of that stuff played into kind of the golfer that ultimately I want to become. And so I'm just kind of steadily going up those little, climbing that little ladder.
Do you look at it as like you're trying to reprove yourself, or do you feel like you're trying to make up for lost time, or have you tried to focus on, you know, the opposite or something else?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a really good question. So I guess through all last year, it felt like I was losing time, right? Like that's like you could probably go back and if you recorded a conversation that I was having with myself at some point, I'm sure that I would have said, like, I'm running out of time, I'm running out of time. And once I kind of accepted that, like, there's not really time, like it's okay. Like, it's not, there's not, like, a timeline. It's not like it's got to be this day, this hour. And once I kind of forgot about all that and just, like, lived like a normal daily life and was calm and worried about myself, practiced, did all that stuff. Like, all the other stuff kind of fell into place. I never really thought about, like, after I let go of the time aspect, after that, you know, there was no reproving. Like, I'm not walking out there trying to reprove who Cohen is, and who I, because I ultimately, like, I don't want to be just the kid who makes runs at two USGA events. Like, I that's not at the end of my life. You know, I don't want to be just that, if that makes sense. So there was a lot, you know, there's a lot that goes into how I treat the game, how I treat myself, that can make me go way above and beyond all my goals. And so I just trying to, like I said, climb that ladder and live those, live that way, so I can ultimately give myself the best chance to do what I want to do.
Well, we'll end this with a little bit of fill in the blank. Not really rapid fire, but
yeah,
similar. You'll get the idea. The most unique aspect of your golf game, whether technically or the equipment that you use, anything golf related as it pertains to you, is blank. What's the most unique aspect?
My wedges are 4 flat. That's probably
just the wedges.
Well, yeah, the wedges are more because when I was growing up, Mr. Jim Gallagher was a big part in this, but I wasn't allowed to use anything above a 54 till I was 16, and then I wasn't allowed. I still don't use anything over a 56. So when I lay open like a 54 degree or 56 degree, I need the heel to be like out of the way, you know, like the heel needs to be like, so I can open it up, if that makes sense. So it does, the heel doesn't dig. So I've just like always had all of my wedges play that way. And so now I'm older and like the ping truck came up to Ole Miss. It's like, man, your wedges are like 4 flat. I'm like, yeah, I know they have to be. I don't know. Yeah, so my irons are flat too, but not as flat as my wedges.
Were they asking whether you were hitting shots off of like a cart path or something, and just banging
I don't know. It was, but yeah, that's kind of a weird deal. I don't know why to even. I guess the best way that I could say that's that way is because that 56 degree. And how I've played that forever, but I don't know. It's a weird deal.
Hey, whatever works, right?
That's right.
You spend blank minutes per day looking at rankings, whether it be Wagger.
Yeah, I'm not zero. I'm not a ranking guy. The only time I've ever really looked at a ranking is if like an event's coming up and I wanted to see if, or like an event's a long time away, but I want to see, make sure that I'm in there enough to get invited, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But you're not bruising over,
I'm not.
Good for you. Good for you. The best place to eat in Oxford is blank.
I'm going to go with, probably Funky's Pizza. I'd have to go with the Funky's. It's the pizza joint. It's awesome.
Is it hole in the wall? Is it kind of fancy? What's the?
No, it's kind of, I guess you could say just a hole in the wall. It's not fancy. Like you can walk in there and anything and eat. It's fine. I guess you could say that, but it's really nice on the inside too. It's just kind of, have you ever been to the square in Oxford?
I've never been to Oxford. I feel like I'm missing
really?
Out. You like some pizza?
Yeah, you got to come. It's cool. Funky's is awesome. Yeah, you'll have to go. It's like a little sports bar type deal.
All right. This current college player has the best singular golf skill. Like, if you could say, all right, I want this guy's driver or this guy's putting.
This is underrated, and he knows it's underrated, and I'm going to say it, is Gordon Sargent's putting is the most underrated thing in golf. For sure.
I've actually, you're not the first person to say that, because people always think of him as just hits it far.
Yeah, no, and everybody hits since we've been 8 years old looks like it's going to go in a foot out.
That's what they say about this next guy, Jimmy G, once made Seve cry. He's your mentor, but if you guys were playing a match tomorrow, how many shots would you have to give him for it to be fair?
How many shots would I have to give? I think I'd just give him, I'd give him a tee, one tee box up, and then we're going to go, we'll go a shot on the par fives. And I think he's fine. I think he can play his way. All right. As long as he warms up before we're rolling.
Does he not warm up? Is that, huh? Just rolls in?
He just rolls in and goes. He rolls in and goes, but he's a stud.
He's still spry for sure. Ole Miss will win the NCAA team title this spring if blank.
If we could just keep being us, and I would say that, to be honest. We just keep being us. We're going to be hard to beat. We have a bunch of guys who are gamers. We have a bunch of guys who drive it straight and putt it good. And that's, you know, at any golf course, driving it straight and putting it good is a huge part of it. So Coach Emerson and Coach Malloy get to coach out of the fairway a lot, and that's fun too. So, yeah, as long as we keep being us, we're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I remember being at Hazeltine last summer, and as soon as Tom Fisher played like he did that week, I remember thinking, all right, Ole Miss might have 1 through 5, the ability, you know, as long as you came back and channeled some of that good play, I felt like you guys were going to be in the thick of things, and here you are. It's February 13th, and you guys are, I believe, still number one in the country. I don't think Puerto Rico will knock you back, but
no, I don't think so.
Now, yeah, this, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, Tom's developed a ton, and Coach Malloy's done a fantastic job. You can tell, like, Braden, Suber, I could go down the list, but Tom is right up in there with them. Like, the way that he's developed Cam Tankersley, he's been a stud forever. Yeah, but, like, yeah. But
didn't
but
play,
like,
AJGAs, really, just kind of
exactly.
Local guy.
Even, yeah, and even, I mean, it's been awesome being around. It just being here makes you a better player.
But would you ever fit into Michael Asasso's pants if you could?
Would I? He's got, like, running back legs. I don't know. I mean,
so you could probably fit into them. They'd be short, though.
Yeah, I could fit in them, but they'd be a little short on me. But, no, he's a stud. I guess I would say him, too, though, about the putts. By the putter, his putter is underrated too. Rolls the rock. He rolls the rock.
One of the most consistent seasons in NCAA history last year, pre-stomach bug at SEC. So that's what I've always said too. As long as you guys can get this bad luck out of the way, it seems like Ole Miss has some bad luck at the wrong time. You guys are finally getting it early. You know, you get the flu out of the way, so you'll have some immunity for a few months, and then, you know, Coach Newsom, I don't think he could – it's like lightning striking twice in the same place. I would doubt he would get hit with a golf ball again. Well, last question for you, Cohen, and this is a big one, and this is probably what you dream about, but Cohen Trolio will play on the PGA Tour if blank.
God, that's a good one. You stump me. If I just keep doing – what I'm doing right now, if I keep having a consistent plan that's followed up with a consistent, like, workout routine, with a consistent way of thinking, I'm a consistent guy. Like, I gotta have a plan, I gotta have a way to think, and then, like, I gotta have a way to move my body and lift weights. And if I have that, and number one being the way that I think, I'll be there.
Just have to make sure the Wikipedia page at the end of your career doesn't lead with 2019 U.S. Amateur semifinalist.
That's right. That's right.
2034 Masters champion or something like
right.
that would be.
That's right. It'll be awesome.
Awesome, Cohen. Well, hey, man, thanks for hopping on the pod. Continued best of luck the rest of this spring. We'll see you down the line at some point. And signing off for my co-host who was on earlier, Steve Burkowski. Thanks for listening to College Golf Talk. We'll see you next week.